Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Condensed Histories, the podcast that takes pop culture and reveals the real history underneath. I'm your host, Jem Deduchu, and this time round, I'm not quite sure what Greg has put on the covering here. If he's actually just put down 71, that probably isn't going to get us a lot of hits, clicks. Instead, maybe he's talking about urban thrillers, or maybe he's talking about Race Against Time. I'm not quite sure, but what inspired me is a rewatch of the 2014 movie 71. That's apostrophe 71, because it's set in 1971. And it's a film I actually saw when it first came out in theatres, and I went with a friend, and we knew almost nothing about it, and I sat there and go, oh, wow, this is really special. And we came out, and we were buzzing from it, and since then I've seen it a few times, and what inspired is I was sitting with my oldest son, and he said, I've got a bit of time, but only a bit of time, so let's do a short movie. And I was planning to show him something else. It's like, that's too long. It's like, fine. And we went through Netflix, and we came to 71. I went, I seem to remember that's only a bit over 90 minutes. And indeed, it is 99 minutes. And he knew absolutely nothing about it. And he sat there, and he was gripped. And so this movie is going to lead us on to a topic that I have never talked about before on the podcast, which is about Irish independence and the Troubles. We're going to get very serious towards the end of this, and this is one of these things where, depending on where you are in the world, you might not know an awful lot about what I just said there. And even if you do know a bit about it, I'm probably going to scare you a bit when I start giving you some statistics around it. So, the way I'm going to say this is a thriller is you have all seen this movie set up. There is a guy who gets in trouble with various different factions, which means that there is no safe harbor for them inside the city, and literally the whole of the city's criminal underworld is out to get them. And then tense chases and nail-biting close shaves ensue from that point onwards. It is a great conceit. It could be something like Payback, be it the original Lee Marvin version or the remake starring Mel Gibson. Or it could be most John Wick movies, particularly 2, 3 and 4, where everybody is out to get John Wick. This conceit is used in so many different ways, but invariably it's rather heightened reality. It's never really set in a historical setting. But to just give you a tiny bit of history before we go into it in a lot more detail later on, Northern Ireland to this day, for a century, has been part of the United Kingdom. Most people would say part of Britain. It is actually part of the United Kingdom. It's not part of Britain, but let's not get too technical here. So in other words, you do not need a passport if you're going to it from Scotland or England. It is technically all part of the same country. However, it is on the island of Ireland, which became independent in the 1920s. However, independence wasn't total. There was an area, Northern Ireland, technically actually Northeastern Ireland, because there's a part of Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, that's actually slightly further north on the west side of the island.
I'm so confused.
Gets complicated already. This is just the geography. Forget about everything else now. But the point here is that there's been this area that Ireland would like back again. They would like to be a total, until this partitioning of the island of Ireland. Boy, this is hard even just to say.
I'm so confused.
It had always been one country. However, for reasons which we'll come into later, there was a part that wanted to stay with Britain after the independence movement in Ireland as a whole, and so that has been policed by London, in essence, so by Britain ever since. And in the 1960s, exactly when it's up for contention, there starts becoming more and more violence in this area, and you can split them between loyalists who wish to be part of Britain and Republicans who wish to be part of Ireland. It is more complicated than that and more deeply entrenched than that. We will come to that later. So the point is this. In 1971, at the height of the Troubles, as they're known, British soldiers were already in Northern Ireland, and they very much were representing the Crown, the Loyalists, and they were hated by the Republicans. And there were a lot of British servicemen who died in the Troubles. The reason why I pause there is, like, I'll tell you the numbers later on. So the setup is this. There is a group of the police, not the army, who are going in to deal with some suspected IRA members, Republicans. And so they go in with their armoured Land Rovers and two trucks full of troops, well, Land Rover and a truck. And these guys are there to keep the increasingly large and increasingly angry locals from overwhelming the police as they try and hunt for guns, illegal weapons. And in the confusion, as rocks start being thrown, as people start screaming, as a child grabs one of the soldiers' guns, two soldiers are sent off to get that rifle back from the child. So they now have to run past the crowd and try and grab the child. And in the ensuing chaos, the rest of the soldiers, in essence, miscount or panic, get back into the truck and leave. Leave these two soldiers now on their own in the area of Belfast that is absolutely against the British Army. And the moment those trucks and cars, Land Rovers, pull round the corner, it pans back to the two soldiers and you just think, oh God, you're dead. This all happens in the first 15 minutes. What happens is one of the soldiers is almost immediately killed, just shot dead, shot in the face. And the second one manages to get away. But he is in full uniform in an area where that is saying, I am your enemy. And so the chase begins. So it's using real history, real politics, real religion, real scenario. This didn't specifically happen. But what I absolutely loved in this movie is the incredible attention to detail of 1970s Britain. Now, I was born in the 70s, so I was very young. I mean, this is actually before, technically 1971 was before I was born. But the things I saw, I just sat there and went, oh, that's very good. That's very good. I never had an outhouse. A lot of terraced buildings. That's terraced, not terrorist. We'll be talking about terrorists versus freedom fighters later on. It's a very sensitive subject, and I'm going to do my best to try and be open to all sides, but also to show issues with all sides. And you know what? I think the movie does a good job of that as well. It isn't like the IRA are 100% baddie bad, and it isn't like the British Army are 100% goody good. There is lots of grey ambiguity, but you absolutely feel for this central private who's just in the middle of this mess, and all he wants to do is get home. It's just brilliant. And it's the attention to detail. So, for example, the civilians are wearing that brine nylon, and the haircuts are a war crime in themselves, because that's what people had in 1971. and there's ridiculous facial hair and sideburns. I'm saying ridiculous. This was all the height of fashion at the time. And credit due to the actors who are trying to be menacing whilst also looking like they've been thrown into a charity shop and been dragged through backwards. So, yeah, it's hard to look intimidating in bright nylon, but they managed to do it brilliantly. This is an incredibly tightly directed movie. The attention to detail talked about the fashion, but other things. When the army soldier finally gets away from everybody and he has a chance to just breathe after he's being chased for his life, and he gets into this outhouse and he's there just crouched on the floor crying. He is utterly pathetic and vulnerable that moment. It's a brilliant scene. And yet I just noticed that next to him was that god-awful toilet paper that I had in my junior school, which was brown and shiny. We used to call it tracing paper because it had the same consistency. And what sick individual thought that shiny, water-repellent toilet roll is a good material to get rid of the detritus of a number two, Jim said politely. It was awful. And if you are somebody who remembers that stuff, you will probably be wincing at this moment in time too, and everybody else will be going, really? This is the stuff in the 70s, the bad woolen jumpers that were knitted by people. It's all there, present and correct. Apparently it was filmed in Northern England in some fairly derelict sites, but it looks exactly like the kind of housing that was there and still exists in some areas to this day in Belfast. The other thing is he goes into a pub at one point. I'm not going to give spoilers for it. It's absolutely about the journey and the twists and turns and the nail-biting stuff. This is a great thrill. It's probably one of the most underrated, least viewed things I have talked about ever on this podcast. Like I say, I really hope that Craig called it something else, because 71 is not going to pull in the listeners. And hopefully, as I'm explaining it to you, you're sitting there going, I've never even heard of this film. I think I need to sit down and watch it. At time of recording in the UK, it's free on Netflix, but it might be off by the time you listen to this. You might be in another country. I don't know, but it'll be available somewhere. It cost about £8 million to make, and I believe its global box office was a massive £3 million. So it failed to make a dent in the box office. But the director is Yann Demange. Yes, the best way to understand the troubles between Ireland and Britain, let's get a Frenchman involved. And look, that's a bit of a throwaway joke, but Yann, he grew up in France, and yet he clearly had scoured through all these photos, and his handheld camera work makes it really claustrophobic and tense and disorientating. It's particularly brilliant during the initial crowd rioty scene as well. He just does so well with the meager budget he's got, proving that you can have something set in Britain that can be an action thriller. It doesn't all have to be set in America, for the record. And, you know, for the likes of BBC and Channel 4, not everything we do has to be a worthy drama. This is telling you a little something about the Troubles, but also it's entertaining and thrilling as well. It doesn't just have to be kitchen sink drama where people are sitting around smoking, decrying how miserable their lives are. You get that from this, but also you get gun chases and chases on foot and shootouts and things like that. It's good stuff. The thing I noticed, and Yann clearly made sure it was, well, not only did he get the shiny toilet paper right, but also when he goes into the bar, the main character, they have those pint glasses with handles with the grooves in them. They look almost like glass pineapples, is the best way to describe them if you've never seen them before. Nowadays, if you go into a pub or bar or whatever and you get a pint, it is a smooth, straight, no-handled glass. So again, I remember using them as a kid because you wouldn't be allowed to drink, but I remember seeing those. Those were quintessential British glassware, and presumably Irish as well, of the 1970s and 80s.
Mine's a pint.
Bravo, Yann. And what's interesting is this was his feature film debut. He'd done various TV shows beforehand, and he'd gone on to be a producer, and also he's done some TV work, perhaps most notably Lovecraft Country, which I've talked about in the H.P. Lovecraft episode, the Dredge episode. So you know, Yann Demange is still doing interesting stuff. And he has made, I think, one other feature film. But shame on everybody. This is why we can't have nice things. This is why we end up with 11 in the Fast and Furious franchise, because those are the ones that make money. But this really tight, intelligent thriller that takes a tired cliche and adds a real zesty exuberance and twist to it, nobody went to see. We need to actually help support this stuff. But this is where I'm going to say the cast is phenomenal. Now, actually, not the main cast member, but one of the key members of the IRA is Barry Keoghan, who couldn't be more hot nowadays, you know, be it in Dunkirk or Saltburn. Actually, I'm going to do a quick aside for Saltburn because I'm never going to do a whole episode on it.
That feels weird, but I'll allow it.
I'd forgotten he was in this. This is the first time I recognized him, and I thought he kind of looked a bit creepy. He's in The Batman as well, and he's been set up to be the Joker in, presumably, The Batman 2 versus the Joker, or whatever it's going to be called. And he's in Banshees of Inisherin. I'm not sure he's ever put a foot wrong. And this is why I come to Saltburn, because I'm about to say very bad things about Saltburn, but it got good reviews. I'm just not the guy clearly it was made for. But if you haven't seen Saltburn, the basic setup is Barry Keoghan is a poor boy.
He's just a poor guy from a poor family.
But he's smart and he's going to Oxford and he meets a posh guy and they become flatmates and mates. And to begin with, they're a bit indifferent to the poor boy, but they end up liking him, putting him under the wing, and they take them to their stately home, which is called Saltburn, hence the name of the movie. And it's, my problem is this, I've got no idea what it's saying. I've heard people say it's a black comedy. I laugh at almost anything. I didn't laugh once in this film. I didn't find it funny at all. People said, oh, it's a psycho thriller. Really? I wasn't thrilled at all. I am aware, because I stuck it out to the end, there is a twist which reveals certain things about what you thought happened didn't happen that way, but that's just the twist at the end. It doesn't change whether a scene was boring or not when it happened. There is some exceptionally weird stuff, which I want to keep my clean rating, so I'm not going to tell you how weird and perverted and odd it was. And, you know, again, this is one of these things, shock value. I know some young teenager friends of the family who were like, oh my God, you know, it was such an amazing movie because this disgusting thing happened. It's like, I'm now of the age where disgusting things happening can't be the only point of the movie. Otherwise, it needs to be rated the same as Jackass and not, oh, this is great art. The only one I think I could possibly get along with, see if this is a normal human reaction. So this is my proof that people aren't acting in a reasonable way. Why it can't possibly be a character drama because none of these characters are realistic. And this is the only safe, clean version. So one of the key characters dies, who is a friend of Barry Keoghan. And because it's such a big stately home, he's buried within the grounds of the stately home. And how can I say this politely? Barry is so overwhelmed by this. And he does this for real. I have to say, Barry Keoghan, well done you, because there are several scenes where it's like, you committed 100% to this, didn't you? You believed in this. The person is freshly buried. There is still no grass over the grave. And he strips off and, how can I put this politely, makes love to the topsoil of this grave. People mourn and deal with bereavement in different ways. That's a new one to me. I've never had to drag somebody off a grave going, I think you need consent for that. So 10 out of 10 to Barry for that one. And also right at the end, I'm not going to call this a spoiler, because if you've made it to the end of this, it's just sort of like you've given up on life or understanding anything. Again, 10 out of 10 to Barry for doing this. He dances completely naked through the halls of this stately home. And he does, how can I put this? He does twirls. This isn't all just from behind. And I don't care who you are on planet Earth. I'm not going to say the obvious double entendre, but you've got to have guts to do something like that. And it's definitely his bravest performance. It's certainly more Barry than I've ever seen before. But, you know, he's really stripped down in this role, quite literally. So, yeah, Saltburn, I thought it was pretentious. I thought it was pretending that it had something to say, but really had nothing to say. It's the usual thing of, oh, aren't rich people wacky?
Are they? I don't know. I've never been invited to these sorts of parties, but more importantly, they're always being nice to Barry. They're not being nasty to Barry. He's not the butt of the jokes. So, yeah, Barry's more of the problem than anything else. Also, and this is the one time I am going to criticise Barry on this one, is he is a proud Irishman. He has largely played Irish characters. He has played sometimes English characters too. But in this, he is specifically Scouse. He is specifically from Liverpool, and he cannot nail a Scouse accent. He just sounds like he comes from Cork, which, no, that's not Scouse. But in going all the way back to 71, thank you very much for allowing me to purge on Saltburn, because that's 2.5 hours of my life I'll never get, or 2 hours of my life I'll never get back again. Pretentious twaddle. But in this, he's absolutely meant to have an Irish accent, so well done him. He's completely in the zone on that one. For the record, I feel obliged to say that the writer-director of Saltburn is Emerald Fennell. Emerald Fennell did write and direct the highly regarded Promising Young Woman, which I think had a lot more to say about society and particularly how we treat young women, etc. Promising Young Woman seemed like she was a promising young writer and director. But on this one, I have no idea what was going on with this, but off you go. Have you seen Brideshead Revisited or The Talented Mr. Ripley or Call of the House of Usher? Then you've seen Saltburn done better in every other aspect. So no, just no. Maybe that's why Barry had to keep taking his clothes off. Emerald likes him. It's like, I think it's very integral to this scene. Anyway, that's pure conjecture. However, the star, the main person, Hook, Private Hook, is played by Jack O'Connell. And that made my son almost fall off his chair because he plays a real scumbag in TV series Skins. Skins is what got him to people's attention, but him carrying a movie on his own shoulders, this is what took him to the next level. And they do such a good job with the script. It's a really stripped down script. It's nothing sort of pretentious or overly talky. What I love about the action is, again, my son says at one point when somebody stabs, like, oh, go on, stab it again. It's like, no, he's already dead, because that's what happens when you get stabbed by a large piece of metal. You die very quickly. This is gritty and realistic. It's heightened drama. None of this actually happened. It is following a thriller arc. There are artifice everywhere, but the covering, the coating of it all feels very, very real and honest. But Jack O'Connell, he is just sensational in this. To begin with, you see him and he's there with his younger brother, and you find out from the way they're interacting is they're both orphans, and he just, his world is his younger brother is still living in a sort of a ball stall, a place where kids are just sort of like kept an orphanage. I don't know if that's even a term that's used anymore, but anyway, and he's sort of saying, oh, I'm being shipped off, but it's to Belfast, it's still part of Britain, you know, I'll be fine. And you just know it isn't. And you see him playing football with him, and just, you instantly think, yeah, you're a nice guy. The actual opening scene is the soldiers all training. And so it shows you they're a close-knit group. They are well-trained. They are trained to kill. It's
in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes.
And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's just within 15 minutes, you know exactly who everybody is, what their motivations are, and then the story really starts in earnest and it all goes wrong and you just think, wow, okay, fine. How's he going to get out of this one? But you really want him to do well in it. But, you know, you've got Paul Anderson, who is the brother to Cillian Murphy in Peaky Blinders. He's great in this. You've got the likes of Jack Loudon, who's in Slow Horses, and Sean Harris as well. Some of these people, I mean, in the case of the likes of Jack O'Connell, Barry Keoghan, and Jack Loudon, all three of those, yeah, they've been around for a few years, but we're talking about guys in their early 20s. These were all their kind of look-at-me moments. So most of them, it's their first proper movie that they were involved in rather than TV, for example. So, you know, again, Yann Demange is getting these young actors who are 10 years on. They're all kind of a hot thing, the great stuff. Also got Sean Harris, who at the time was just kept playing slightly creepy assassins in various different things. On this occasion, he's sort of playing British Secret Service, sort of intermingling with various different elements in the Troubles. And I also have to do a quick shout out to Babu Cisse. He plays the Lance Corporal of the unit. And I just love I have to be clear about this. He is a black man, and clearly from the accent, he's from maybe the West Indies, possibly Jamaica. And so, you know, a classic kind of squaddy that you would get back in the 1970s. The British Army to this day will take anybody who's part of the Commonwealth, which is most of the nations that are ex-part of the British Empire, although a number of those countries, including America, for example, aren't part of the Commonwealth anymore. But, you know, come one, come all. You want to serve? You absolutely can. But what I love about him is his casually racist language about the Irish, showing an equal opportunities view on discrimination. So, just nobody puts a foot wrong in this film. You don't know what's going to happen next. You are sometimes sitting on the edge of your seat, biting your fingernails, going, come on, get out of there. Or, oh no, this is a bad idea. Or, oh, etc. So it's a really superb movie. If you watch this, well, first of all, it's less than 2 hours. And secondly, unless you're going to turn around and say, Jem, I don't like anything that's thrilling, then this isn't the movie for you, but I'm selling you a good one on this occasion. Trust me on that. So, let's go to the actual situation that's going on. Again, there's a very good talk at the beginning. When people talk about exposition, people explaining the situation, quite often it could be quite clunky. It's like, why are these two people talking about this on a journey? It's so that the viewer knows what's going on. But it's pretty realistic to have a British Army captain have a map of Belfast to the new soldiers in Belfast and saying, this is the bit that you're safe in, this is the bit that's enemy territory, this is what's going on.
Pay attention. Now, this is basic information, but very necessary. Roughly, very roughly, you can divide the city between the Protestant Loyalist East, here in orange, friendly, and the Catholic Nationalist West, in green, hostile.
Because you'd want to get that briefing as a soldier and also when you are a viewing member of the audience. So, just to be silly for a moment, there was an acting coach I knew years ago who basically said there are certain words, I've forgotten the term he used for, I think they were key words or gateway words, that if you say them a certain way, you can get into an accent. So the one I remember always was, he goes, if you say hyperactive a certain way, you can end up with a Welsh accent. So, for example, hyperactive, oh, there's lovely, Vauxhall Nova, yucky da. So apologies to all Welsh people listening to this, but Hopefully you'll recognise that's different to my normal accent. Well, no, these aren't necessarily gateway words for that I was taught, but some of these phrases just instantly get me into a Northern Irish accent. So let's talk about the people who are part of the British government. So first of all, you have the RUC, the Royal Ulster Constabulary. I will now stop with the accent, but they are the Northern Irish police. However, because of the levels of violence, they're certainly not like your average police officer walking down the street in, let's say, Birmingham. They have fortified police stations, they have armoured vehicles to drive around in, and while they, like other British police, are not armed, they can call in for armed assistance as a matter of fact. So, in essence, they're the ones, in theory, trying to keep the peace, but make no mistake about it, in the 1970s, they were heavily aggressive towards the Catholic community, which was anti-British government. So let's go to them. Their group that was representing them on the streets was the IRA, the Irish Republican Army. Now, at this stage, and they do point this out, the very original IRA, which we'll come back to in a bit, were there at the time of Irish independence in the very early part of the 20th century. By now, we're talking not about a, well, obviously from some perspectives, they can be considered freedom fighters. They are fighting for the Catholics of Belfast and in Northern Ireland. But these people are setting off bombs in various places. I have the very last bomb to detonate by the IRA on the mainland, that is Britain, was in Ealing Broadway, which is an area where I grew up, and I know exactly where the bomb went off. And if you start bombing pubs, bandstands, bus stops, you're not the good guys in that situation. And also, whereas I can understand why you would be perhaps against the Royal Ulster Constabulary causing, you know, lots of violence towards the local population, quite why you're letting off bombs in London, apart from the fact that you think you can get away with it, that's not actually helping your situation. However, the people who wanted to remain part of Britain, who are referred to as the Loyalists, their version of the IRA would be the UDF, the Ulster Defence Force. So they're basically the same as the IRA, just on the other side of the coin. On the one hand, they're trying to defend their neighbourhoods from aggression from the IRA and Catholic rioters, but on the other hand, they're doing it by bombing Catholic pubs and causing lots of fights. So nobody's looking good in this situation, which, to the credit of 71, they go out of their way to do. Like I say, it isn't like one side is 100% great, although we obviously want Jack O'Connell to live, thank you very much, but he has no political opinions throughout the entire movie. They're kind of careful about that. Now, why is all of this happening? Second only to the Israel-Palestine situation is the situation in Ireland. Now, Israel-Palestine, we can trace back 3,000 years. How far can we trace back issues between England and Ireland? Well, 700 years, so it's still quite a long way. Cutting a very long story short, at the reign of King John, yeah, that one, brother of Richard the Lionheart, he led an Anglo-Norman invasion. I say he had nothing to do with it, but he sent people to take over Ireland, which Ireland, just to be clear for a moment, there wasn't a king of all of Ireland. Ireland had various different territories, which would happily war against each other. It's a little bit like Wales. But what unified the Irish, like the Welsh, is the one thing they could all agree on is they didn't want to be ruled by the English. However, I was careful there. Anglo-Norman. We are talking about a period where the aristocracy were more likely to speak French than English, and probably also had lands in France until John lost most of them. So, it, you know, saying the English hate the Irish is grossly simplistic in this situation. However, just to add fuel to the fire, if we're going to have a nationalistic movement or if we're going to have political disagreements, let's add religion to the flavour as well. Because in the early 1500s, so we've now fast-forwarded 300 years, we have the Protestant Reformation, you know, Martin Luther nailing his agendas onto the door and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, point is this, up until that point, at least in Europe, everybody was Catholic Christian. However, now there's a new flavor of Christianity, and this would lead to violent war across Europe. This was not specifically a British thing. However, Ireland remained Catholic, and England, cutting a long story short, became Protestant. And so this led, let's go forwards another 140-odd years, we now get the era of the rule of Oliver Cromwell, who is a Puritan, a very hardcore Protestant, who fought in Ireland to suppress uprisings. He was brutal. You get places like Wexford, where there were massacres of civilian populations, and this is remembered very much in Irish folk memory as Oliver Cromwell was unusually cruel. However, do you remember how I said there were wars about Catholicism and Protestantism across Europe? This happened just a decade after the 30 Years' War in Europe, which is one of the most devastating wars in European history. And yes, I am including the world wars in that as well. In fact, for Germany, they had a worse time of it in the 30 Years' War in the 1600s than they did in World War II. That's how bad it was. And you could usually split the lines between either Catholic groups or Protestant groups. There was cannibalism, there were massacres of population. So when you put it into that context, Oliver Cromwell was not unusually cruel for the time, but putting all of that to one side, we can all agree that massacring civilian populations is wrong. But because of that, the Irish had genuine grievances. Then let's fast forward into the 1800s, we get the Irish potato famine. That's not the English fault, it's just potato blight. However, when you have made the local population so poor that they can only afford to eat potatoes and drink milk, which interestingly is the cheapest way you can get basic nutrients to stay alive, but when one of those is taken away from you, potatoes, because the crops keep failing, they got nothing to fall back on. And so the British did not do anything to help the famine relief. It is estimated that more than a million Irish, and it's not a big island with a large population, died, and more than a million Irish left Ireland to the New World, which is important when we come back to that. So there were multiple attempts of Irish uprisings for home rule, and indeed by the time we get into the very beginning of the 20th century, there is serious conversation about it in Parliament. There is now a feeling that maybe with other parts of the colonies and empire perhaps wanting to self-govern, why aren't we going to do it with the Irish? And the irony is, when people talk about colonialism and racism and violence in the British Empire, that's a true thing. It's a little simplistic to say that's the only thing, but it's a true thing. The irony is that the closest and oldest and whitest colony, Ireland, was the place where the British behaved the worst. So there was genuine reasons for grievance in Ireland, but they made a bad call of deciding to get German assistance in World War I to carry out what's known as the Easter Rebellion or Easter Uprising, call it whatever you want, in 1916, where the British had battle-hardened troops to put it down. And absolutely, in the middle of a war, when you're being armed by the enemy side, it's very hard, apart from the locals, there was no sympathy in Britain. There was absolutely sympathy before the Easter Uprising for the Irish in Britain, in the British Parliament. But for that, nobody was having any of it. However, this is the point at which Britain goes wrong. Because they used a certain level of war logic and called these people traitors and executed a number of them, which, again, is not an unreasonable thing in the middle of a war, but it did look like super heavy-handedness in World War I. This led, at the end of World War I, for a further war, the Irish Independence War, and this is where Winston Churchill, Home Secretary, he sends in what's known as the Black and Tans. These are demobilized British soldiers from World War I who are now given policing and patrolling duties, and the reason why they're called Black and Tans is they're wearing half police uniforms, half military kit, and were using the same rifles they were using in wartime, but walking through civilian populations. This war goes on for a few years. It's a classic insurgency thing. The British Army could absolutely beat the Irish if they decided to stand up and fight a conventional battle. The Irish know they would lose that, so they blend in with the local population. Hit and run tactics, etc. Freedom fighter versus terrorist. You take your pick. This ends up leading to De Valera being the first, I'm going to call him Prime Minister of Ireland, but also he is critically involved with the cutting off of the northeast of Ireland to become this Protestant. Everything else is a republic, independent, Catholic. Whereas the Northeast are the groups that are associated with the British, intended to be more aristocracy, you know, obviously were Protestants as well. All of this together means that you have this mixture in the top corner of that. There's a rather forgotten Liam Neeson movie about this called Michael Collins, who was one of the people there at the Easter Uprising. He also was a member of the IRA, the original version of the IRA, and he was one of the key people involved with the decision to partition Ireland. And what's interesting is Michael Collins, spoiler for the end of the movie, but this is history that's over 100 years old, he was killed by other Irish politicians or members of the group that he used to be allied with. Then you get World War II, Ireland's neutral throughout the whole of World War II. And then what happens in the late 1960s is the temperature just keeps rising in Northern Ireland, in this area of Ireland that's actually part of Britain. And there are a number of different moments, trigger points, which lead to violence, which eventually the British government feels like this is so out of control, the RUC, the local police, can't possibly deal with it. Let's send in the troops. And once you send in the troops, it suddenly feels very much like a military occupation. And so it's contentious. Some people said, you know, the trouble started in 68. Other people say it started in 69. Other people say, you know, this particular thing triggered it, that particular thing triggered it. But let's say from roughly 1968 to 1998, you have what's known as the Troubles. You would frequently see on the news at night time, you'd have these armor-plated Land Rovers, and you could see petrol bombs being thrown. You have things like peace walls being thrown up in Belfast, where people would, literally walls were put up in the middle of streets to separate the Catholic from the Protestant communities, where people would start putting paintings and murals, perhaps on the Catholic side, commemorating various members of the IRA who'd been killed by British forces and become lionized and legendized. And then on the other side, you'd have a painting of perhaps the Queen and the Union flag to show how loyal they were to the British country. So there isn't a solution in that situation. Turning around to a member of the UDF and say, shall we just give this all to Ireland and the Catholics? They would rather die, or at least probably kill everybody else with them. But if you ask members of the IRA, you willing to concede on this? They go, absolutely not. What's interesting, though, is because both sides had to smuggle in things like plastic explosives and weapons, etc., money, it means they got pretty good at smuggling. And so actually this evolved into organized crime on both sides, for the record. Neither side has the moral high ground or low ground on this one. And so in essence, by the 1990s, the IRA or UDF have a political wing. They also have a criminal wing, and it just gets very, very murky. What happens in 1998 is what's known as the Good Friday Agreement, and America brokers it. America had been supplying, through charity work, lots of money and guns to elements such as Sinn Féin and the IRA. And therefore, they had power to sway, because there were literally millions of Americans who associated themselves with Ireland. However, the Irish referred to them as plastic Irish, because they have got no idea that, oh yes, I'm Irish through and through. You were born in Boston, and your father was born in Boston, and your grandfather came over on a boat from County Cork or whatever. You're American, you're not Irish, but absolutely they'd happily take the money. My grandfather remembers, who's American, remembers somebody going around raising money for the IRA openly. This is just outside of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania. And the story he told is like the IRA were like living in tents in the middle of it. Basically painted a picture that the Americans would love. These are like Robin Hood. They lived in forests. You know, they stole from the rich and gave to the poor. That was the basic angle. However, my grandfather, who frequently visited us in the UK, had seen some of the footage of the IRA bombings and things like that, and he got pretty angry at those guys, but also at his friends who just bought it hook, line, and sinker. Oh, why are these people lying? Well, they're lying to get your money, is the simple answer. So after 1998, ironically, there were a few more bombs and things like that, but what really sealed the deal, and this may sound insane, is 9/11. Because at that point, blowing up civilians in America suddenly didn't quite sound so sexy and freedom fightery and Robin Hoody after the horrific events of 9/11. So that was a weird sidebar. Unfortunately, violence still persists. It's nowhere near the levels that it was. Over those 30 years, 3,500 people died. 52% of them were civilians. It was a very dirty, bloody war, but more than 1,000 British forces died in it. Only about 16% were paramilitary, so that would be UDF and IRA. Other groups are available for the record. So actually, nowhere near as many of them died as actual British forces. But you also have in 1972, infamously, Bloody Sunday, where twice, the year before, I believe, and this year, 1972, you have the British paratrooper forces firing into unarmed crowds. Now, there were civilians throwing rocks and things like that, but that does not justify opening up semi-automatic military hardware into civilians who are angry and might be shouting at you, but you don't fire back at them. And that was a case where it took decades. The initial argument was, we saw guns in the crowd, the IRA were there. And you know what? The British population were on the sides of the paratroopers because that's easier to swallow than our forces are just gunning down innocent civilians. It took decades to get to the bottom of it. And by the time the truth came out that the paratroopers, I guess, as a human being, I understand if people are throwing rocks at you and screaming that they hate you and want you dead, you might panic and shoot. But as a representative of the government, you're not allowed to do that. So if you like, I understand why it happened. That does not justify the murders that happened. And I'm not entirely sure anybody ever actually went to prison over this. There were also elements of the SAS apparently carrying out hits on known IRA members who at that time weren't actually armed. You know, like they're driving down the road and they ambush the car and riddle it with bullets. And there's the end of that IRA person who's important in terms of getting the explosives into the country. Whether you think that that's a legitimate target or not probably tells you something about your views on this. But the point is, killing people generally isn't a good thing. But when you throw in religion with politics, with 700 years of history, it was a powder keg ready to blow. And it had to blow at some point. And we are still feeling the effects of it into the 21st century. Bit of a sad one on this occasion, but an excellent movie for you to watch. Do check out 71. I'm at Jem Deducci on Twitter and also on Threads. Let me know what you think. Please don't forget to click subscribe and give us a review. Thank you very much. And as always, another episode coming soon.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.